Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
I am Andrew Ryan, and I'm here to ask you a question.
Won't you come on down to Rapture? Jam a needle in your arm. It'll slowly corrode your genetical code, but it's all part of the charm. So you're a gross abomination.
Welcome to Flame On. I'm Brian the Bear. I'm here with my boyfriend, Pat.
Hey.
Who is preoccupied somewhat at the moment. Take that for what you want. Let's see. Going in a clockwise motion, which I always screw up, we have a bunch of guests with us here. We have Austin.
Hello.
Adam.
Hey, guys.
Other Adam.
Hello, hello.
And BJ.
What's up?
We are all gathered here today to discuss video games and board games, pretty much gaming in the general context. And we are all also members of the Orlando Gay Geek Group. Started about 2 years ago, I think. Is that right?
Hasn't been that long.
Adam's the founder, one of the founding members, right? You and Ben. And,
yeah, me and Ben.
And Joshua, formerly The Question. Two-ish years, sound right?
God, it doesn't seem that long, but yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because I first became aware of them through Joshua, and we actually went, I think, to one of their first things at the Geekeasy. And it was, there was like a book club that he was doing, but then I think it became the Gay Geek Group. Anyway, long story short, it was actually original Orlando Gamers.
Right.
And we have since expanded it to be more of a geek inclusive culture, group on Facebook for local Orlando based gay geeks. Now, of course, Flame On is not just local, but if you are ever visiting the Orlando area or you live in and around the Orlando area and you did not know about us, you can find us on Facebook and check out all the things we're doing. We'll talk more about that later. But we are gathered today about gaming. It's a roundtable discussion about all things. We have already had some great discussions about gaming that you've unfortunately missed because the microphones were not up and running. But we will try to regurgitate that here too. We also have our pod dog Havoc here, who is, you know, basically wrecking havoc, chewing on microphone cables,
tasting us.
Yeah, he's a handful, as you have probably heard in previous shows. Let's start the discussion. We were already actually having sort of this pondering of gay characters in video games and how many there were. And not just like the NPCs that you can sleep with, like, you know, in Dragon Age. Although that is, I guess, technically with the newest Dragon Age. Actually, even the first Dragon Age, there was characters that were gay only, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think in the second one was the first time you could actually have a relationship with one of your companions in, yes, the Dragon Age. But in the newest one, in Inquisition, it seems like, I'm not that far into it, but it seems like all characters are fair game for all kinds of romance options, which is really not only great to see them answering the community's call for that, but also I think helps strengthen the game's storyline.
I mean, you want a game that pretty much anyone can feel is inclusive of their orientation and reality, you know, whatever. I mean, that's the ideal. And, yeah, of course, up until recently, that wasn't really possible because that would take a lot of permutations. And now, finally, we have this, like, BioWare. And that's actually one of their things they are pushing. You know, they're not trying to push an orientation or reality or anything. They're just giving you options.
Yeah, it seems like it's more customizable. It just, you know, like, I know a lot of girls who are like, I'm going to play a guy and... Oh, well, that guy's kind of hot. Well, I guess my character's going to have a husband now. And, you know, sort of, it's just, you know, you can kind of be whatever you want.
Right.
Sort of thing, which isn't really, you know, like you said, it's not an agenda-based thing. It's more like a, just kind of, I haven't done this before.
I think in terms of console gaming, the first one that was memorable to me that would, when you were playing as a point of view main character, would be Fable 2. I remember picking out a husband... And going and getting the ring and bringing him back to the house, like, that was a huge moment in gaming for me.
It was. I want to say the first Fable did have something like that.
You could, you could have same-sex relationships in the first Fable.
But they definitely expanded on it in the second and the third one, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, no, I absolutely, those kind of games are huge for that. Adam, you were saying Last of Us also has a actual, like, in-story.
Yeah, The Last of Us, Ellie, in the DLC, the recent DLC, she was revealed to be lesbian. I don't think that's really ever happened before with, like, the main protagonist for a game, as far as, you know, linear story-based games that don't give you a choice of who to play as.
Right.
I mean, you see in Mass Effect and The Sims and anything else, you know, you might get a choice, but this is the first time I've seen that they've said, here, the protagonist is gay.
I'm trying to think back, because, like, we go back now and sort of apply, like, a revisionist lens to certain games, and, you know, this is totally not really true, but, like, Zangief from Street Fighter, giant bear of a man, we all like to pretend was probably homosexual.
I think we all just wish that was true.
I don't know. I'd maybe go for E. Honda's hand abilities.
Well, from a practical perspective, yes. or some of Chun-Li's poses, maybe.
I wish I had her legs.
But they actually, in the Japanese gaming, they have been making a sexually ambiguous and gender ambiguous characters for far, far longer than even, like, they did, like, console games where, and I wish I had, like, my hot cheat sheet in front of me, but they absolutely had games like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, especially JRPGs. You've got, like, Kuja in Final Fantasy IX, who, you know, they're not going to say, this was way back, so they're not going to say, oh, he's gay, but, I mean, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, Naoto from Persona 4 was, like, you know, it's a woman dressed like a guy. And then there's, like, unresolved sexual identity issues with Kanji in Persona 4. So it's, like, it's a very fluid thing. And for the characters, they're in they're high school age.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all kind of figuring out that whole identity, which works really well with the story.
Right.
So it's, but there's certain characters, like, they really don't care what you think the character is, as long as.
Hell, I mean, this has even come up recently. I think there was a BuzzFeed article or somewhere, Birdo. and then later Toad and Toadette, and how, I mean, Birdo was at least cross-dressing, if not transgendered character, and they said in the book itself, like, it wasn't like they were like, oh, there's a sort of vaguely male looking character with a little what did Birdo have, like a bow. But no, in the manual it said Birdo is a boy or whatever who likes to dress like a girl. I mean, it was very clear. Toadette, Nintendo has come out, or Toad rather. Because there's, you know, if you've ever heard the Brentalfloss Toad, a song about Toad is gay, which is really funny, actually. But then Nintendo has had to clarify, because of Toadette, well, what is Toad's gender identity? And they're saying he doesn't have, or it, whatever, Toad does not have one. So they're very careful to sort of put that there, even though they have Toadette now. So that's
a fungus. They're saying that about Birdo now.
Oh, are they?
He's genderless, or...
But I remember that manual because it stuck out to me at the time.
Yeah, it said he likes to dress in girls' clothing.
Likes to be pretty.
Yeah. He could have been a drag queen. He could have been whatever. I don't know. That's funny. We have not had a character of it as a drag queen yet that I can think of.
I don't know how well known this game is, but it's an old PlayStation game called God Hand. And it was kind of had a Western setting. And the battle system wasn't difficult, but it was kind of annoying. But the first two bosses looked to be brothers, and they were very effeminate, and they wore, like, feather plumes and They like fought you in front of their stage.
Oh, really?
So it was, I don't know how they feel. They were probably the hardest boss battle I've probably ever had in my life because they killed me about 20 times.
Yeah.
That's drag queens.
But yeah, so I was like, I never want to run into this type of drag queen ever in my life because it was very much unspoken that they were like the two strongest guys in the first stage area that you're in.
Oh,
and
nice.
You do not mess with them, and for good reason.
But
so,
it's an important distinction that it's been a shift off of transgender, cross-dressing, drag queen, any of that being the villain characters into being an accepted hero character.
Yeah.
True.
Character, or even just an ally character in the game. Like, it's been a very positive shift in the past maybe 10 years or so. And I'm sure people will be happy to comment on many of the games that they've loved that we aren't familiar with or forgetting right now.
Oh, please do. I mean, as an opportunity to mention it, if you are just listening to us on iTunes or SoundCloud or on our website or whatever, if you go to Facebook, if you go to Twitter, you know, we are nothing but, you know, thrilled actually sometimes to get responses. And we've had very few really negative ones. And I'm not asking for them. But I am saying that if you're interested in getting, like, you know, sharing your opinion, comment on the post.
You can't acknowledge them.
So what else in gaming? I know there – is anyone familiar with the Gamergate issue and how women journalists were treated? And does anyone know about that?
I'm
about that?
Somewhat familiar with it. I'm going to be as neutral as possible. A lot of people say the Gamergate thing – is kind of for fairness in gaming reviews. Personally, you really don't have to worry about big corporations being involved in gaming reviews because there's a lot of user-generated content as far as reviews go. I actually don't get a gaming magazine for the reviews. I actually get it for the previews of games, upcoming games. But and then there's other people that say that it was started based on...
was it like a jealous ex-boyfriend, I think?
Kind
right?
of. It was a girl.
A jilted
got,
lover.
A girl got a game published, and it got good reviews because, like, she slept with one of the reviewers, or one of the reviewers was her current boyfriend. And I'm like, I really am not involved with it whatsoever.
I think from wherever it started, it has become this weird cultural look at gaming journalism. Like you said, some people out there I think genuinely feel like that is important and they're talking about it. The other side of it is these people just like slut shaming and posting, yes, personal information of these female journalists and female game makers, and like completely taking this situation and making it so much worse.
Yeah. I think we can agree that as a community that has faced repression, oppression, that intimidating women or violence or attacks against women is an unacceptable way to create change. I think there's no argument there.
And yeah,
that's about my only opinion on Gamergate, is that took a really terrible turn for the community.
Yeah, and it didn't really get too far into the transgender and queer communities as much, but it certainly is something that, you know, it felt familiar. It felt like there was a level of harassment and around gaming, which we all could agree is a fairly male-centric community. And these women gamers out there, of which there's probably way more than anyone would ever expect, but that they were then being sort of in some ways harassed or criticized. Like
Felicia Day, she was supposed to give a talk somewhere, and she expressed her opinions on Gamergate, which she was not happy about, and she canceled her talk because she had death threats. And
yeah, I'm they like, had a couple people cancel.
Not
yeah,
cute at all? Like, what? It's Felicia Day. She's like
amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't hear about Felicia, but I know that there's been a couple problems like that, and it's bad for the whole community. I feel like it's on the decline. Like the story's faded out, and everything.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't flare back up again. But talking about females in gaming and gay characters, I wanted to jump back to that just for one point, in that it is a game, the Avatar Korra game that came out that was Bayonetta Studios, whatever that studio's name is. They
did it's Platinum Games.
Platinum. They released a pretty short game. People weren't very happy about the length of it. But recently that series wrapped up on Nintendo, on Nickelodeon, And the character was very unambiguously in a lesbian partnership at the end of the in the final scene. And they've commented to say, you know, interpret that as you will, but we think you can interpret this pretty clearly. So, yeah. I mean, it ties into gaming a bit.
Kurosami? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't watch Korra. I know enough to go, oh, okay, that's the main character, and then I guess that's her girlfriend. But, I mean, just the final image that I saw, I took that away, and I guess some people were still kind of like, huh?
No, yeah. The writers did come out and say, this is what we meant. They're in a romantic relationship.
And I wonder, I mean, I'm guessing that was, and I think they even said that has been an ongoing thing they were laying the groundwork for. Right. But I know that Nickelodeon, was it Nickelodeon? Yeah. That they pushed them to a web-based platform. And I'm now wondering if it had anything to do with that. Like, they knew sort of the direction it was going, and they just weren't ready to have that on there now. I don't know. I'm just, you know.
They were pretty, somebody, since I practically live on Tumblr. Somebody mentioned on an article that, like, you know, oh, this kind of came out of left field. And they literally put everything from, like, season one, their character interactions from season one all the way till the end of the series. And it is it's like a normal it's like a normal relationship developing. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can see where it can kind of takes that turn.
Yeah.
Like, I'm no spoilers or anything, but Korra communicates far easier with her at a certain point in the series. And I'm like, I would not be doing that. I would not be doing that with any of my friends. Like, I wouldn't just be, like, sending them letters and stuff like that. I'd text them maybe and call
so
it a day.
So she definitely goes into the gay protagonist hero main category.
Sure. No, yeah. Definitely.
We'll chalk her up to that.
Before Jared has joined us, say hi, Jared. I mean, you already said something.
Hi.
There it is. We were talking about gay characters in video games, and we kind of covered a few of the more common examples, and we touched back on the ambiguous Japanese stuff. Can you think of any characters that you've encountered over the years that you really gravitated towards?
There's a list of them.
Oh yeah, no, we know. The internets have tons of lists of them. Go find that and come back for us now.
I can't think of anyone.
We, of course, mentioned the ones we wanted to be gay, like Zangief.
You know, yeah.
I mean, not you as much, but...
Yes.
I was also... So, as you don't know, Jared actually just graduated from the Florida Interactive Education...
No. Interactive Entertainment Academy.
Thank you. FIA. Ooh. And it's a video game academy affiliated with EA and UCF here in Orlando. And I'm sure you had women in your cohorts. Were there any projects that you saw that explored any, like, you know, either... I don't think you would have told... I don't remember you told me about any queer issues in gaming, but there was actually that the STD game that you guys
we
not
did.
That this is a queer culture issue, but in the semantic map that is my brain, that was like one neuron over. So, yeah, I mean, were there any other, like, strong female role characters, anything like that that stands out from what you saw from your fellow creators?
Well... It was interesting just from analyzing my classmates. A lot of them weren't particularly girly girls. They were, as I would call them, lady bros.
Lady bros. I love that.
And I would equate that to the gamer mentality, where it's not so much masculine, but it's something that's not a like a homemaker or some sort of nurturing
I totally understand where you're going.
It's a spirit of competition.
Not delicate?
Go. Yes, not delicate.
Not delicate.
I think competitive is maybe the best word you're arriving at there at the end.
Yeah.
Don't want to alienate any listeners from that.
It's okay.
He just means people who are competitive in gaming.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
But did you see any projects, though, that sort of you could see them going that direction?
Okay. No, you know, other than the project I worked on.
We'll talk a little bit about that, because I know we talked about it way back, but, I mean, refresh our listeners.
It's not published, so, you know, it's not anyone can play it.
Yeah.
But, we participated in a contest funded by the CDC where we were to educate people about safe sex practices and, you know, as put down down by guidelines by the CDC. So we took that information and we try to translate it into a dating sim where you were able to choose, you know, any partner you like, you know, regardless of your gender. And, you know, you went through a series of mini games whenever you tried to prove some sort of sexual contact. So.
Did it have a part of the game where you actually were slipping on the prophylactic or?
Well, yes.
Oh, good.
We did that with fruit, not actual stuff.
That's symbolism. Yes. Fruit covers. Yeah. Yes. CDC recommends fruit covers, Gal.
So, and it's not published, but I know it got a lot of attention, I believe, at the time. And it's there somewhere. Maybe someday it'll sneak out on Steam or Android Market. What do we want to see? So we are all gamers. We haven't really laid down much of our, like, you know, what are our favorites or all that. But what, given what we like in gaming, would we like to see that would be either more representative of our own lives or more forward in queer culture? I mentioned, and this just, you know, occurred to me, having a drag queen as a protagonist in some game. And I know RuPaul has her Dragopolis or whatever that game is that I've never tried, but I've heard is like one of these casual gamer type things. But, like, you know, what would we want to see along those lines?
I would say looking at more homosexual relationships in a common context instead of these, for lack of a better term, caricatures, where you have your I hate to be quoting other literature out there, but just you know, you have your privileged whiter, richer, you know, gay male character, but, you know, there aren't any other representations out there. So having
Everybody's pretty fit.
And yes,
fit and Grecian, very Caucasian,
just like real life. Yeah,
I am not fit nor Caucasian.
Yeah. I wouldn't give myself a fitness either.
So more of an accurate, real, not realistic, but more of a common representation that kind of cuts across all socioeconomic and race and all that. Okay. And you said relationships, so you actually want to see, like, kind of like Bioshock we're talking about. Not Bioshock.
Last of Us?
Dragon Age, thank you.
Okay, yeah.
But Last of Us as well, where the characters are that orientation, you get to see some of their relationships and sort of that kind of thing. What else?
I'd like to see that being an option in Half-Life 3, maybe?
Oh. Ooh. Gordon, well, you know,
go ahead and tag that on your podcast. We'll see how that comes.
I would like to actually cosplay as Gordon Freeman at some point. I have been told there was a time, maybe not since I gained like 50 pounds, but I could maybe pull that off. So
yeah, I think
I
could see that, definitely.
That'd be fantastic. I would really, really enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe a Valve character. That would be kind of fun. I'm stuck in Pokemon Y right now, but I've heard the new ones have, you encounter characters that people are, you know, fan arting left and right as being a gay couple.
Oh.
Does anybody know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Do you remember names? I don't know what the names are.
I can't remember. It's the leader of, like, Team Magma and the leader of Team Aqua. Yeah.
If you find this on Tumblr,
so much fan art.
Please retweet or tag us or do whatever you can to get our attention.
Oh, it's not going to be hard at all.
Because I would like to see that. Not that I'm a big Pokemon fan, but I am also on Tumblr a lot. And that would entertain me. So specifically Pokemon type.
Well, yeah, I just feel like the more family oriented games that are normalizing, like Jared was saying, not the stereotypes, that are normalizing gay characters' appearances, that are portraying realistic characters, that's all for the better. And it's more that general acceptance coming through, but our video games are an export out of the United States that reach so many more countries where things might be great here, but may not practice the same level of inclusiveness and freedom to express oneself.
I like it.
I'd like to see like a AAA game where the main character just happens to be gay. You know, we've all been playing as straight characters our whole lives. And I think it'd be nice if everybody else got to step into somebody else's shoes.
Right.
And
you came right out the gate, like,
yeah,
like, I'm going to go take these flowers to my boyfriends. And then all of a sudden, aliens attack. Like,
what if, like, you made Infamous and Cole McGrath just happened to be gay?
Oh, yeah, right.
Solid Snake.
Just you find out halfway through, when you meet his boyfriend.
Well, it's kind of like Metroid, that moment at the end when you realize that you've been playing as a woman that whole time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a meaningful moment when you go, oh.
Oh.
Because you have to sort of buy in, you know, with whatever, and then you get that moment, you know, somewhere during the game. Mm-hmm. I like that.
And it's kind of treated as a by the way
exactly.
sort of thing. Like, oh, I don't know if anybody's seen Paranorman, but like the part with the football player, if anybody, I don't want to. I have a bad habit of spoiling, so I won't spoil it. But like,
we've already spoiled so much. Well, I think usually these kind of podcasts are spoiler alerts. I mean, people don't always say it, but anyway, yeah. So yeah. So there's a football player out or something.
One of the characters is just constantly trying to date him and flirt with him and everything, and then like at the very very end, she's like, oh, I want to see a movie sometime. What, like a chick flick? And he's like, oh, yeah, I think that would be great. He's like, my boyfriend loves them. And then just kind of cuts away where she's like, well, I just wasted a whole 2 hours trying to date you. Like,
got it. Nice.
Like, and you really don't think of, you don't, and you realize by that point in the movie, you're like, oh, I really don't. It's kind of a non sequitur. It's like not really a big deal at that point because you've already invested so much into the characters.
Right.
So I think it would be kind of nice to see a video game do that.
I feel like the community's been providing some of the stuff we'd like to see, like, you know, community content for Skyrim, for example.
Yep.
You know, provides a lot of add-on gay character stories or weapons. Options. Weapons. Oh my,
the dildo sword.
Yep.
Okay.
But it would be really fun to see games like that with. And I'm sure that I'm doing a disservice by not mentioning ones that I've already played, but games that have stories of backstories of, you know, they were same-gender couples and they lost a spouse, or they were separated because of the Great Cataclysm and we want to get back to our lover. I was playing, again, back to Dragon Age, and you can get an agent for the Inquisition if you use the right storyline options the rogue mage dies that she was having a picnic with, and she's like, oh, I don't know, she must have just died. And you question her enough, and she's like, yeah, we were totally having a romantic picnic, and I'm a lesbian, don't tell anybody. And it's like, no, you don't need to hide that. Come work for us. We're totally cool. So I like that those are showing up.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah.
BioWare is, I mean, they've just demonstrated such a good habit of doing that now. It is a given almost. Although then when there's not something that they want, people freak out and go crazy. I mean, that's the flip side of that, is you develop expectations and then you don't always meet them. And all right, so that's a lot of gaming stuff. Let's do the obligatory, like, what are we playing right now? I have been playing Shadow of Mordor a lot. I just got it from the Steam sale, so that's why I'm coming a little late to the party. But I love it. It's beautiful. I play it on my computer on Steam, and like, I got my little big TV thing set up, and it just feels like a great video game experience. If you haven't played it, it's sort of like, I guess, sort of, it got a little bit of Batman Arkham Asylum-y sort of elements, and it's got, I'm sure, a bunch of other games that people have played that I'm not familiar with, but it delves deep into the Lord of the Rings mythology that I also love. And you're a ranger, and he's like possessed with a wraith. So you go into this like ninja mode, which is basically your wraith that's attached to you, and you get to see everything in, like, you know, black and white, and see things far away. And it basically puts you right outside the Black Gate at Mordor. So you're like constantly running around, stealthily killing Uruk-hai and collecting artifacts and all this Lord of the Rings stuff. And I won't. There are some characters from the movies that you do encounter, at least one so far. And then of course Saruman, you know, at least in passing, if not maybe eventually you fight him. But anyway, I really enjoyed it. So that's what I've been playing mostly. Let's just go, we'll go clockwise again.
I've been playing Kingdom Hearts 2.5 because it Ooh, just came out, so that's yes. been a lot of fun. I keep trying to dabble in Destiny. I just still can't get that far into it. And then playing Warlords of Draenor, which is awesome and amazing.
So that's WoW, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's playing with the Tank Guild over on Proudmoore, so that's been a lot of fun, too.
Yeah.
It's made the game more interesting.
I've heard so many people coming back to World of Warcraft now who I think were back when the pandas happened, and then they kind of drifted away again quickly. Yeah. But this seems to be really recapturing that love of the game.
Yeah, they really redid a lot of the pieces of it, and they took out a lot of what people hated about Mists of Pandaria and brought in a lot of really enticing things It's been really solid so far. A lot of people have stayed with it longer. Because I know when I did Mists of Pandaria, I stayed around for like a couple weeks, and I was like, all right, I'm good. But no, World has me really entrenched in it. It's good.
Cool.
Some of the games I've been playing lately are old staples. I've been putting time into Minecraft. It's a favorite of mine. Not much for story, but lots of creativity. Mm-hmm. But I also translated that over to the new Disney Infinity 2.0 with the Marvel characters. Nice. Which is so below my age demographic,
yeah, you know.
And it's so much fun. So I've liked that.
Don't worry too much about it. My roommate plays it all the time.
Oh, as soon as I could buy Captain America, I was sold on it.
I'm mixed about it because like it sounds like it's fun. I played Skylanders a little bit, so I know kind of the idea. But like, I just like the amiibos have come out. Of course, I'm pointing with my hand. No one can see on the radio here. I have a few of them. None of the rare ones where we should have when those damn things came out. Of course, we're all kicking ourselves now as they go for like 40, 50 bucks on eBay. But I like the amiibo platform more than the Marvel one for now because you know the Marvel platform or the Disney platform, Disney Infinity, you only can play in those games, which seems, I mean, it makes sense because that's not. It's platform independent, right?
Right, right.
So you can use the same guy on different platforms, which is an advantage too. But the Nintendo ones were brilliant because they're a similar idea, but you can use them across as many games as support them.
Yeah, and if anybody's familiar with these figurine collectible games that we've just mentioned, Skylander and Infinity, and now the new amiibos, those first two I mentioned had a USB platform that you would plug into your console or your PC. And the new amiibos sit right on the Wii U tablet controller to connect to the
yeah, it's like an NFC reader sitting right there on the thing. So they have like these NFC chips.
So it's obviously been planned for the entire console line because they put it right into the controller to be able to read, which I think is just so smart. We could see a lot more coming out of these.
Yeah, and again, it's a platform option, so anyone can buy in. But I am curious about these the Marvel / Disney one because. Now that Marvel is part of it. Like, the Disney one was kind of cool. Just Disney characters. I'm a moderate Disney nerd. I like some stuff. No, I'm not crazy.
It was
like
cute.
It was cute. But when they announced the Marvel edition, everybody just blew up. And,
I'll bring it over. You can borrow it.
Okay,
it'll
cool.
be fun.
That's I've also what I
been,
feel like.
It'd also be been fun. In Shadows of Mordor and Dragon Age Inquisition have been the two AAA titles recently that have been really fun.
I really want to play Dragon Age, but it's like I'm waiting for it to go on that sale that Mordor went on.
I got the disc. You can borrow that one too.
Steam free weekend.
Support your gamer friends. Yeah, loan your discs.
Jared, are you playing anything now that you're not in school?
Oh, no. Seasonal affect disorder. I can't even speak today. Seasonal affect disorder. There we go.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It is the season, I guess.
Yeah. I finished Dragon's Crown. Still haven't touched Dragon Age since I got it.
Oh, yeah. Knowing the EA people.
I've been playing hours and hours of Diablo 3.
Oh.
With on the PS4, because it has great local co-op, so me and my boyfriend can play it together.
Oh, cool.
It kind of annoys me how many games come out and they're like, oh, one player local, four players online. I'm like, well, why can't you make two players local?
Yeah.
I just like, you know, we play a lot of games, so I'd like to play everything. We thought about just putting another TV above the first one and hooking up two consoles just so we can play together.
I mean,
that's what some friends of mine did for Destiny.
Did you really?
They did. They went out and got, one got the PS4.
Do I know these friends, by the way?
Yeah, I think so.
It's not Mike and Lauren.
No, it's not Mike and Lauren. No, it's Adrian and Bailey.
Oh, yeah, I know them too.
So they went out and got like one PS4, and I think it may have been my buddy Adrian, and he was like I kind of want to play with Bailey. So then he just went out and got Bailey one for like his birthday, and I was like, well, it's nice to have that much disposable income. I wish.
Yeah, developers, we want to play with our friends on the same couch, not buying two consoles, please.
Well, and this used to be the norm, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Way back, Nintendo, Sega, you know, Dreamcast, whatever else.
Dreamcast.
Yes, PS1.
Yeah. Game of Two controllers.
You didn't have internet. All you had was local co-op. And you had one console, and you split the screen. And then the internet happened, and it was like, oh, well, now I don't have to deal with this crap anymore.
Yeah, I think part of it is part of the constraints, and Jared might be able to speak to that more, is that in the developing, you know, you're using, you've got these amazing graphics, and then to have to render that for yes. two different points of view is really putting a strain on the consoles. But
absolutely,
that's the PC Master Race coming out. Well,
the was it a PlayStation 3 put out that they put out it was a couple of games, and it was like SimulView, where it was literally both screens were overlaid. So if you're looking at it without the if you're looking at it, it looks like just two games playing at the same time on the same screen. But the interesting thing was is Sony has these like $20 3D glasses, and they're like the active 3D glasses. So they have like a little button, but you hit the button and it separates out your screen with theirs. Which I both love and hate, because when I would play a first-person shooter like GoldenEye or something classic like that, I would always watch the other person's screen to figure out where they are.
Yeah, even on Steam, there's a game that is that. So it's a really? Screen watch, and I haven't played it, but it's somehow you have to watch the other player's screen in order
crazy.
To
I've
shoot
never heard
them.
Of that.
But as far as playing together, I'm not buying that they can't do that unless it's a first-person shooter. Somehow Blizzard has implemented it in Diablo perfectly.
It's not that they can't, but it does attacks the 3D hardware to render multiple scenes and have that. But you can do it.
Or
and
there are many games. The cameras just zoom out. Like Diablo, the camera zooms out to make room for both characters.
Yeah.
It's not displaying
the way
that
Dungeon
games.
Siege doesn't. If you played that one.
That's right. I remember that.
It was awful.
Dungeon Siege.
But, we were just playing Marvel Lego before the podcast started, mm-hmm. and that is a perfect example of two players can – you can – second seat hops in. Somebody can get up, walk away. Somebody else can grab the controller. The Lego games are great for that. So if you're looking for two-player games to play with your boyfriend, the Lego one
Sonic
titles
2 had did a good job of it too back in the day.
Yeah.
Just pick up second controller and you're controlling Tails, who has unlimited lives. So you don't even have to worry about them.
But I feel like that's also a big thing with casual gaming, right? Like Super Smash, you can have up to 8 players now. Like I feel like a lot of more casual gamings allow for that that type of gameplay. Mm-hmm. Like Diablo, I'm surprised that you can't do – well, Diablo you can though, right?
Two
the same
characters,
thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's like those games where you only have one screen that you can play on are the ones that do it for that. But first-person shooters, it's so difficult now because the game maps are so much bigger.
Right.
So if you were to have a smaller screen in any way, it's going to be so difficult to even try to play.
You add those heads-up displays and they go from like a giant circle to a tiny little dot. You're like, oh, this isn't going to work.
Because I mean, like Call of Duty does allow that. They do allow split-screen co-op and stuff like that.
Okay. I just remember playing GoldenEye 4 hours.
Don't try playing that.
Proximity mines only.
I almost bought the. They did a remake, I think, and I read a few articles ahead of it, and I was like, oh, maybe I won't.
Yeah, it's
you just can't
to play
go back.
Now. No. Yeah, no, going back to those pixels, like even Final Fantasy VII now, trying to replay, like they're going to re-release that, but I'm like,
oh, that looks awful.
Rather not.
Yeah, I thought that they were going to redo the graphics, but it just looks like they're just
it's the PC version.
Everyone
pretty
thought
much.
They were going to redo it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The PC version, and it was okay at the time, but no, not now.
Yeah, no.
Has anybody played any of the old, like, I don't know if you guys were around for this originally, but the good old games? They have the website, they have, like, the old Sierra Online games. They have, like, Wing Commander.
I played those.
I got to give credit to them. They released Alpha Centauri, Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri,
yes.
Which is a civilization. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a reskin. It was its own independent game.
Yeah.
But right when, Endless Earth. I think I'm getting it wrong. Beyond Earth. What is the... There's a new
Yeah, I almost
one.
Bought it, too.
It's like the Civ 5 space game.
Yeah, exactly.
And people were not too thrilled with it. If you're listening, you love it. Tell us about it. Tell us why.
Yeah, please.
But good old games, GOG.com, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Put out Alpha Centauri for like $5 the same day that that released. And man, comparing the two, I really like the original Alpha Centauri.
And what I love about good old games is it's like Steam to a point, but then you own the games. You don't have to be online ever again. You can take that with you on a disc. It's yours. Yeah. And that's cool.
Yeah. And at this point, even your Chromebook can run any game that they sell.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that.
You'd have to jailbreak the Chromebook. Yeah. Chrome OS can't. Yeah. But I'm saying most...
They don't require a lot of gravity.
Yeah. They're not that intensive on the CPU.
But I mean, of the era of, let's say, early like 8-bit and PC and all that, were there any games that stood out to you that were just like, oh my God, if they just made this game today with today's technology, it would be amazing. The one I will put out there, and you can take your choice here, X-Wing or TIE Fighter.
Which are both on GOG now.
They are on GOG, yeah. But I want to see a complete retextured, like, modern content. Because the gameplay was amazing. I mean, it was not a Rails-based sim. It was free fly anywhere you want. You had Death Stars. You had Star Destroyers. I mean, it looked at the time awesome. You look at it now, and it's these flat polygon bullshit. It wouldn't work. But, I mean, are there any games like that you guys have gone back or you remember playing years ago that you just really would love to see reborn?
I thought I would love to see Bionic Commando reborn.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, wait, did you like... Okay, so let's talk about that real quick. Did you not like the new 3D whatever one, or did you not like when they did the sort of the remaster...
No, it's
like
2.5D. I was okay with.
Okay.
I thought, oh, this is going to translate to 3D. Great.
Yeah. It was awkward. I did enjoy parts of it, and then the music was decent, but yeah, no, it was awful.
I have a friend who swears by, I think it's System Shock 2. It's an old PC game. And so I tried it, and I couldn't get past the antiquated control system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it probably was amazing, but now I'm just so spoiled with modern. So I would like to see that story completely the same, redone with a new control scheme, because... Apparently, it's one of the best ever, and I just can't get through it now.
This is the same people who did Bioshock, I believe. Some of the same people, of course.
Yeah, it's...
And so, from what I've heard, some of the story elements have bled into the later stuff. And Bioshock, I mean, that was... And Bioshock Infinite, those were my amazing... Some of my favorite modern games. So, I actually would like to play that as well, but now I'm scared of the controls.
I'm currently playing Persona Q. On my DS, absolutely obsessed with it.
You got like
it.
The fancy pants edition of that, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I got the full edition of it. It came with the second set of tarot cards, which leads into the other game I'm playing, which is Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, which is the fighting game version of Persona 4. It's like a continuation of the story from Persona 4, except it's done in a fighting game element, which is done by the same people that did... Guilty Gear. And the cool thing about the fighting game is it perfectly... I didn't know you could blend RPG elements and fighting elements into a game.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently you can. And it's actually... The control scheme's really, really interesting. And it's a lot of fun. The characters are the characters are significantly better balanced in Ultimax than just Persona 4 Arena. And I'm also playing Kingdom Hearts 2.5. Absolutely obsessed with it. For those of you listening, do not take critical mode lightly.
Oh, they
updated. Ugh. One of the chief complaints they had with Kingdom Hearts 2 was that once you level up your forms, your special forms and everything, the game's just a breeze.
Uh-huh.
So they gave people more difficulty in spades. Where if you pick critical mode, you actually get like 50 abilities right off the bat because it's that hard.
Oh, wow.
I think I'm level 75 and my hit points are only a max. My hit points are 70.
Jesus.
So it is no joke, but it's tons of fun.
But it looks great, I'm sure, now.
It's beautiful.
I did play. I have the first remix they did, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the Final Fantasy VII redo.
It looks fantastic.
A lot of love went into it. And I'm also... I just got a PS4, So I was kind of desperate to play a game on it because right now I just moved all my streaming stuff to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I don't have to wait for Hulu to load. I've been playing Transistor.
Oh, how is that?
It's kind of like a little baby game. But it's
Makers of Bastion.
How do you mean little baby game? Like it's a short game or it's for children?
It's a shorter game. It's definitely not a baby game.
It's like a sci-fi sort of.
I started it up, and the music was incredible. I just paused it and listened to the sound for a while.
Fantastic. You can actually hold down, I believe it's the left, the L1 trigger, and she starts humming. Because the character you play is a singer, but she's lost her voice due to being attacked by assassins. Mm. So yeah, there's a whole kind of secret society thing,
and it's kind of a Tron element too, right? Like it's within a digital cityscape.
It's like a futuristic, like the way technology works and everything. It has a physical effect.
Doesn't have an obnoxious narrator the whole time, like Bastion.
The narrator
obnoxious. I don't know about that.
No, he has such a soothing voice.
Oh, yeah.
I would listen to him read me the phone.
Wait,
book.
Which one, Bastion or Transistor?
Transistor.
Both.
Okay. I loved
Bastion's narrator.
I liked the idea of it more than the execution. After a point, I just got tired of it.
So. Well, in Transistor, it's a companion of some kind. I think like these. A present character.
It's essentially your weapon.
Oh.
You're the consciousness of somebody is inside the weapon, which functions. I'm not a huge IT guy, so there's probably all these IT references I'm not getting with the game. The coolest thing about the game to me is you can equip everything to anything. So you have a basic slash attack. You can equip that as like an armor slot, which will essentially give you more hit points and you can take more damage, or you can equip it as a buff to another attack. Vice versa, there's a move that lets you, you're essentially invisible to enemies for a few seconds. You equip that to like a bomb function, and it makes it so other enemies can't perceive you for like 2 or 3 seconds. So Yeah, I mean, that is probably the coolest element I've ever seen in an RPG.
And that was just on the Steam sale as well, and I didn't get it.
The Steam sale will kill your wallet. It'll be up again.
Yeah,
come around next time.
And the other cool thing about it is that some of the functions the weapon gains are story-based. Like you gain a certain ability when you find like a body or something, and you have 3 slots to the information section of an ability. If you equip it to like your armor, essentially, it unlocks a section of the bio of a certain character. If you equip it to a weapon buff, it unlocks another section of the bio. So it's a story element that encourages you to mix and match your attacks.
That's good.
Which is really cool. So I'm loving it. It's hard not to just sit there and listen to the music though, because the music is fantastic.
Are there any other games you're currently in?
I'm always playing like 5 games at the same time. So I think that's it for now. I mean, because 2.5 is technically 2 games in 1. So
he mentioned on his DS, and I feel like I should shout out now. Anytime there's a Orlando Gay Geeks event, bring your 2DS, 3DS.
Yes.
To it, you get street passes. We play games. It's fun.
In fact, we have started, or at least tried to continue the tradition of playing our 3DSs at Parliament House, which, if you do not know, is a rather large local Orlando gay resort with several bars and a dance floor and all that. And, you know, we are occasionally looked at oddly, I think, when we pull them out. But with our little group together, there's safety in numbers. And I certainly feel less uncomfortable.
See, I've noticed that, and it makes me jealous because I'm like, I left my DS at home.
Well, yeah,
now, I know.
No, I mean, honestly, I've started bringing it pretty much to every, Pat's game night. A couple other friends of ours will go when there's like a Bears night out. We'll make sure we bring it. And, you know, even if we don't play, we do the street pass thing. But
yeah, you never know.
You never know.
On that platform, mm-hmm. I wanted to mention Bravely Default is one that takes some time, but is a great one. And the Final Fantasy, it's like Theatra something.
Theatrhythm.
Yeah, that's it. Theatrhythm.
Yep.
I've heard it. I've been thinking about getting that.
That's a pretty fun one.
I have both of them, and mainly because I'm a musician. I love video game soundtracks in general. So being able to have like a little music game with the music of Final Fantasy, and this new one has all the way up through Final Fantasy 14.
And it's my understanding the second one has all the content from the first. So if you're going to jump in, you can just go right to the second?
I think so. I haven't compared the lists. And certainly, like, the fight song from X game is obviously going to be in both. But it's a fun, it's a music game. So you're sitting there pressing buttons or using your stylus and holding it down or moving it in a certain direction in the rhythm. And it's fun. And you just get to watch these little fights. And depending on how you do rhythmically, it will affect how far you get and all that stuff. So, I mean, if you're a Final Fantasy character or a fan, or you just like music games, it's great. It's a fun little game.
I have so many. I've just about every copy of Guitar Hero, Rock Band. I actually have Parappa. Frequency and Amplitude.
Ooh, Parappa.
Parappa the Rapper, yeah. Samba de Amigo.
Oh, Samba. Okay. I have that one, the little shakers. anybody ever play Vib Ribbon? Do you remember Vib Ribbon? That was one I think that it was sort of obscure, but it was one of the very first of the sort of Bimani. I think that's what the Japanese group was that did the early games. But you had like this crazy rhythm, or it's like electronic Japanese music, and you had like this like very simple graphics, and you'd be kind of going along, and you'd have to react at certain points, and the music would change, and it was very impressive musically and gameplay wise, if not graphically.
The podcast suffers from not getting Brian's hand gestures through that whole explanation.
I did do a little reenactment of the rap, but if you look up like Vib Ribbon,
like he was conducting.
Oh yeah. Oh god, it's been a while. If you look up Vib Ribbon on YouTube, you'll see great stories.
There's a couple of fun. It's a platform we haven't even mentioned, but iPhone apps and Android apps that play along that too, because you can touch the screen and follow the line, and the interface is super simple, but the music rhythm is fun.
I'm actually glad you mentioned those platforms, because Pat, who unfortunately found a better use of his time to wrangle the dog away from our cables, actually is a huge casual gamer fan of the Doctor Who Legacy game. And it's funny because I had started playing it. And it basically, if you haven't seen it and you're not a Doctor Who fan, you're not going to want to play it, because it's just another Bejeweled clone, basically. Mm. But what's fun and what's addictive is you get little bits of story, and when the new season, the last season, was airing, right after the episode would come out, you would get a level about that episode.
What?
And you could then get characters from that have been introduced in those episodes. They have just managed to sustain this now for, I think, at least 2 years. In fact, there's so much content that Pat, who's been playing it for a while, just finished the new content that's out there. So now he's frustrated because they do these like fan levels, but they're really hard. And like you can still go back and collect other things. And there's lots of like, outfits for the Doctor.
And you can level up your companions and stuff,
yes.
Right?
Oh, yes. And you don't level up the Doctor.
Level 40 Donna.
Basically, I actually don't.
I think that if it's in the mythos, it's in this game.
Well,
I have given it a try.
That they have an Advent like Days Before Christmas thing, and they actually had characters from like novelizations and from comic books. The recent like Titan comic book Doctor Who series.
They are not playing around.
Yeah, no, they're digging deep. So and
Captain Jack and Yanto and all of the Torchwood folk.
Jack definitely. I don't know if. Maybe Yanto. I haven't seen any of the other ones, but I would not be surprised.
If you're a subscriber of Loot Crate, a while maybe 3 or 4 months back, they put out a promo code for that gave you all the Doctors as an unlock.
I must have joined Loot Crate right after.
Yeah,
I did not.
That's what got me to that game. And kudos to Loot Crate for throwing in game keys every once in a while.
Oh,
they know exactly what they're.
One of the Loot Crate ones that I thought was amazing was a Street Fighter 4 Alpha. Is that what it was? Took the whole game, and it's like $20
on Steam.
$20 credit, and it's still a fun game. I mean,
be sure to check out the Flame On website for Brian's referral code. We'll give you those if anybody's looking into it.
Yeah, actually, I know at least one or two people who work for Loot Crate, so I don't know how much they advertise. We should hit them up.
Yeah, right.
Or
that wasn't a plug. We just brought it up.
Conversely,
but it's funny.
And I'm gonna just. Well, save aside. No, no one's done like a gay, geeky like version of Loot Crate. Business opportunity.
But I'm wondering what would go in that.
Like, I don't know, but I mean, you could mix it up and do like geeky stuff.
The Monopoly Man's like gay nephew. and his husband holding hands. Game piece.
No. Okay. Like, we have friends who do geeky T-shirts. I mean, you know, there could be a combination of things. Anyway, sorry, we're just completely off the rails at this point.
Yeah,
let's bring it back to gaming. We did want to talk a little about board gaming. Of course, gay board games. There are a few out there, and I probably played at least one of them. The one that I will mention is not a board game, but it is a game. It's Top to Bottom. Has anybody ever played this? This is Cards Against Humanity for the gay community.
Oh, I had not even heard of it.
It is just as offensive and wrong, but if you're more squeamish and
this I need this in my life,
it's a lot of fun. It came out about a year ago. I bought it. We've brought it to game night on occasion. We did like a Cards Against Humanity thing, and then we brought that in and did that. And I mean, you know, it's exactly what you expect. But that's the only really
which is a Cards Against Humanity card. Which exactly what you'd expect.
Oh,
nice.
Oh, see, I never remember the names until I read them, and I'm like, oh yeah, bigger, blacker dick.
I don't think that there are that many games that are specifically for the gay community, but I will say that whether it's just an enlightened audience or, you know, people who are competitive, there are a lot of gay board game groups. That's what Gay Geeks in Orlando grew out of. When I was in New Orleans earlier this year, the Crescent City Gamers are a great group. If you're in that city, just look them up on Facebook. A gay game night seems to be happening in most cities these days.
Yeah, and we're tying it back in Orlando Gay Geeks. We are actively trying to get more events going, and Austin actually took the lead on the group and was sort of rallying the cry for a game night, which, I mean, we were talking at different game night, but about Battlestar and how I've had this copy of Battlestar Galactica, the board game, now for about 4 or 5 months and just can't get anyone to sit down and play.
Oh, it's such a good game.
And
playing Roslyn.
Everybody tells me, and I really, really want to do it. So I think that'll be like top of the list. Of course, another go-to would be like Settlers of Catan. I have the Star Trek version, which I actually picked up from Target. Target had that for a long time on clearance. It was like 50% off. And then one day I was finally like, you know what? Screw it. I may not play it forever, but I'm going to buy it. And I love it. I love Catan.
Kind of going back to the gay board games, it's not really gay, and it's actually pretty like misogynistic.
Uh-oh.
But there's a game called Ladies and Gentlemen. Has anyone here played that?
No.
It's a team game. It's a co-op game, like a bunch of teams of two, obviously. And one person plays the man, and one person plays the female.
Okay.
And how the game works is kind of in phases per round. So the guys will play the stock market, and they'll make deals and fulfill contracts. And then the ladies will go into stores and pick out outfits. And at the end of the game, whoever wins is basically, if the men have enough money to pay for the women's outfits, whoever has the nicest outfit wins.
Wow.
What? And so playing that with a bunch of gay males is probably one of my favorite things to do. I came from the SF gamer community, and that was one thing we would all do, because some would even bring props. So they have tiaras and earrings.
Like that's the best.
My Pretty Princess board game that used to be out there, or whatever that was. And it led to very many good role-playing sessions with this game.
Hmm. I think that is top of the list. I think Battlestar and that, like, between the two.
That sounds amazing.
Done.
A lot of Southern Bells in there. It was wonderful.
Oh, my God. See, now, I have never gotten that into the gaming that I've done, where it got to, like, that cosplay, or not cosplay, but, you know,
breaking out the wigs.
Breaking out the wigs. Thank you. That just sounds amazing, though.
It's so funny too, because like hearing you guys talk about board games, I'm like, I like a couple board games. I play like the Call of Cthulhu board game.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah. That was Arkham Horror.
Arkham Horror
is
a 4 to 8 hour game.
It is, and I played with some friends of mine up in Tallahassee, and we played. I think they had all the expansions, every single one of them. And it was about a 6 hour game, but it was so fun. And it's just like, you're like, oh, Mr. and Mrs. And you're like,
well, Battlestar Galactica, same company makes that, and that can be like a 4 to 6 hour game.
Oh wow!
Because
Yeah, I don't know if Battlestar goes quite so long, but it's certainly as engaging.
If you have the two expansion packs for it, it goes very long.
Because you have people playing humans or Cylons, and then the secret Cylons, and they're revealed, and it's a long process. But yeah, I've heard Arkham is a lot of fun,
Arkham Horror is, like, fantastic.
If you enjoy being a Cylon, as I do,
Another fun game out there is The Resistance. It's very popular. Or the reskin of Avalon by Indie Boards and Games, I think. Indie Cards and Games is the company publishing that one.
Okay.
That one's really popular. Where some people of the in the party are spies that are secretly trying to sabotage, and others are trying to successfully be the resistance against the power, and they're trying to take down the authority, and the spies are trying to sabotage the sabotage missions. It's a pretty fun party game. One that always gets brought out at our board game nights is Seven Wonders. If that one, you build
civilization.
No. You build up your civilization and fight with your neighbors, but it's simultaneous play. Everyone picks a card and then reveals it at the same time, so you're never out of the action. And I think that's a definite theme to modern board games, this board game renaissance.
Have you ever played Power Grid? Is that right?
Oh, you hate it?
I Nobody. I know a couple of people that play Power Grid.
I enjoyed that.
Power Grid's fun. They've got a couple boards where of different cities.
Right.
But you're trying to establish your infrastructure of a power grid network in the areas of a city, but other players can encroach at a more expensive cost.
Right.
Yeah, that's a very good strategy game. They did a Power Grid First Sparks game that cuts down on the playtime a bit, but keeps kind of the theming, except now you're your early humans who are having to hunt for food with spears and go after mammoths, and it's a first sparks of civilization, but it's a
Power
Grid type game. That's a good entry one if you're wanting something a little simpler than the full on Power Grid experience.
Any board games that are go-tos?
Not really. We play a lot of Cards Against Humanity, but like anything longer than that, I'm not allowed because I get too competitive.
Oh, one of those.
So if it's like one time we fucked up and played Monopoly.
Oh boy.
Oh no. See, that would probably be a good disclaimer. Like, it's probably a good idea to play board games with maybe another couple or a large group of people, because sometimes Monopoly can be relationship ending. That's not by the end of Monopoly, I'm ready to cut somebody.
Well, because it's such a painful experience after a certain point. You're just like, oh my God, how much longer will this go?
And you can get the same way about Settlers of Catan, though, if you get really into it.
Yeah, actually, I've had that sort of go that way.
And don't play Diplomacy with your friends. That game is set up for betrayal. But a faster option that's really popular these days is the Game of Thrones board game, where you play Lannister or Baratheon Stark houses and fight over territory on that world. That's a pretty fun one.
I'd like to try that one. I'm a big Game of Thrones fan.
I've actually been I've been enjoying it's not really I guess it wouldn't really be a board game. It's more kind of like it's Flux, if anybody's played that.
Flux is a great one.
I love Flux.
Have you played the board game version?
No, I didn't realize there was a board game version.
There is, and it's very interesting. The owners actually of that game actually came to GamerX 2 years ago, and so they're really big. They're very invested in the GamerX con that happened over in San Francisco, and they were all really friendly. Yeah, I basically hung out with, I forget her name, but she was one of the co-creators, and yeah, we had a good time.
So let's tangent off real quick. So you know Matt Kahn from GamerX. You've been to both the two? Or?
No, I only went to the one before last year, so 2013.
Okay, because we interviewed Matt it was around the time of the first one, and I saw him. He was actually at New York Comic Con doing a panel, and we're talking about how he's reviving GamerX, because the biggest problem was it's set in the heart of San Francisco, which isn't cheap, and the show ran on some tight margins. It wasn't a very big show. I mean, you know, in terms of cons, if your experiences are the larger comic cons and you go to this, you're going to be a little disappointed, because it's a niche con. It's a gay gamer con, which crossed over into other things. I mean, I know they had some comic book stuff, some other stuff. But the big thing they're trying is that you're going to move it to San Jose now.
Yeah, it's going to help them save money. And it's also a very interesting place to have it, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, not every gay gamer lives in San Francisco. Like, the group that area has is the SF Gamers.
Uh-huh.
But a ton of people live on the peninsula. So I think it's really going to help with also congestion.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really good one in 2013. There was a lot of space for board games, at least. Not a lot of people took up that area until the tabletop took over one room. But, like, my friends and I, we actually made a kind of grassroots Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament we had, because I was obsessed with that for a while.
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Love Yu-Gi-Oh! I can't play Magic, but I can play Yu-Gi-Oh! All day.
That's so funny because I've tried Magic and I had a Yu-Gi-Oh! Deck, and you're right. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is far more like it just worked better for me.
So many traps.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really good. Like, we had a huge group for like the Avalon game there, and that was a ton of fun. They had a lot of like retro consoles, which did apparently very well in their room. They had a lot of guest speakers, and I wasn't able to make it out to that, but I did make tons of friends from all around the area just by going to it. So it was really fun.
Yeah, I am very proud of Matt for sticking with it because it is such a hard thing to break into and then to continue and sustain. And I mean, admittedly, he has his own share of crazy drama on stuff that he goes out and kind of like freaks out publicly and kind of comes back like, oh, by the way, we're still doing it.
There's be like a filter on Twitter for him.
A little bit. But we love Matt. He's a great guy.
Good guy.
So we didn't really touch too much on MMOs, and it just popped up in my head. And I don't know if we want to close out with this, but certainly you mentioned World of Warcraft. I had been playing that for a while. I also played Lord of the Rings Online, but my favorite has got to be Old Republic. And we've talked about this in the show, so I'm not going to belabor it, but I was actually in a role-playing guild that did do role-playing occasionally in the game, and that was my first experience having any role-playing whatever in the game.
Not to mention hilarious.
Yeah, I'll have to refer back in the notes somewhere to the episode where I describe what happens, but it was a singular moment in my gaming career, I think. Since then, I have actually met some of the Rough Trade gamers. There is a group on Facebook. I don't know if anyone else is.
Yep.
They had a meetup at Dragon Con. That we went to and talked to some of the guys up there, and a lot of nice people, a lot of interesting, crazy people, but a lot of nice people. So that's my guilty pleasure, I guess, because I think of MMOs as guilty pleasures because their life suck, you know. But Old Republic's mine. BJ, have you played any?
I have never played an MMO.
That by choice because you know their life sucks?
I don't know. It's a combination of things because when World of Warcraft first came out and all my friends were like super excited about it, I was like, well, what's it about? And they were like, well, have you played Warcraft 1? No. 2? No. 3? No. And they're like, and it's that pause where they're like, huh. I'm like, okay, well,
how
I'm
do
not
I relate this to you?
Exactly. I've played, like, some Diablo with people online. I've played Borderlands with people online. I have recently been giving thought to playing Final Fantasy 14.
I've heard many good things about that.
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Since they did the relaunch.
Yeah, the reboot.
Yeah, the reboot. I've watched a couple of friends play it and everything. I just, because it's a life suck and I have a bad habit of, like, you know, buying like 6 games at the same time, I'm thinking it's something that I'll just kind of put by the wayside. And on that rare occasion that there's a year where nothing comes out that I really, really want to get first day, I'll probably take that money and put it towards a prescription.
I'll say my guilty pleasure subscription MMO is EVE Online,
Lord.
And I'm only still in that because I can now earn in-game money to pay for my subscription without having to pay real money for it.
See,
can't you lose in-game money too?
You can. Like, you have to be very. It's the most unforgiving MMO I've ever played.
The first time I played EVE. Because I love space sci-fi, that's huge. So that there's a sci-fi space thing that you can fly your own ships and all this stuff. Like, there was an old game, back to the good old games thing, called Privateer. That sort of reminded me a little bit of like what they were trying to do, much simpler. So I start playing it, and I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to take my ship and I fly it out. And then I'm like, so how long is this going to take to get from the space station to the whatever? And I look, and I think it told me, but I don't know. I was like, what, are you kidding me? 25 minutes of real time to fly there? What kind of bullshit is this? Like, I'm used to an MMO where you gotta run. You know, you gotta run. But you're running in a world. There's things to look at.
In space is just open space.
Freaking fly.
System after system.
You
can
go have a cup of coffee.
It's Wind Waker in space.
But Wind Waker, at least, it's pretty. I mean, you know, Wind Waker, there's some stuff to do.
The void.
I
drives men insane.
After that, it did not last long.
Yeah, it's definitely not for everybody. It's famously called Spreadsheets in Space because it's all about numbers and calculations.
But I think that's cool because there's a degree of verisimilitude that, like, you know, real, if you had real space commerce, that's like giving you a very good experience. It is like what that would be.
Yeah, and so, the combat is
like none other, because you are so invested in what you're risking out there in space.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you can't just respawn your ship, right? You got to start back from the rust bucket to whatever.
Yep. You only fly what you're willing to lose. That's the number one rule of EVE.
That is kind of a cool thing. Adam, have you dipped into
Since City of Heroes.
That's right. We talked about this. You got pretty deep into City of Heroes, right? Did you do City of Villains as well?
I did City of Villains, yeah.
Oh.
I started playing when that came out.
Those are so much fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I'd like to see something like that again.
I mean, it was the first superhero MMO before Marvel and DC did what they did. And it really set the tone, I think, for what DC did, at least, with their MMO. Marvel's a little different.
Yeah.
Marvel's more like the League of Legends-y sort of kind of thing. But what were your character names? Do you remember any of them?
Don't make me.
You had a really good one from what I remember.
I have to hear them now.
I remember my first character. His name was Etcetera.
Etcetera.
I had The Rook.
The Rook?
Ooh.
Yeah. I was Queen Titania.
Nice.
Titania, however you want to say it.
Titania.
And he was a boy, but festooned in pink all over. It was like the gayest character I've ever created, and I was so proud of it. And then when Villains came out, I actually made a backstory sort of like his ex-boyfriend, King Oberon. And he was like a muscly sort of, daddy type. And I had this whole story, and it was just, it was ridiculous.
And that's one of the reasons, I mean, obviously we love comics and heroes, but, we were free to self-express however we wanted in those games. Mm-hmm. So hats off to those games.
Now, I know there's an MMO, I can't remember the name of it. It's like called, it's like Secret Order or
Secret World.
Yeah. And that one actually takes place like modern times. And there's a lot of mystery solving, and there's an actual in-game browser where you have to research certain things in game. Oh yeah, but it takes place in modern times.
As that was,
but it's like a heavy mythology though.
Yeah, it's got like a whole mythology thing.
But it's a complete in-game experience. So it's not like an augmented reality game or anything.
Well,
they tried AR, but
the AR was actually built up a lot prior to that.
Okay,
but that one is free to play now, I believe.
No, you got it. It's a one-time subscription fee.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's just purchased Guild Wars style.
Huh.
And you were just mentioning Marvel Heroes and DC Online are both free to play now.
Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings Online is,
yeah.
Old Republic is also free to play.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much the model has been determined to be. Does World of Warcraft, they have a free to play? Yeah.
You get a free trial for 21 days or something
So they have like still not caved to that model.
No, and they don't have to.
Neither has Final Fantasy 14. I'm pretty sure that's still a subscription.
Yes. Okay.
The good ones.
But if you are going to jump in, any of those, the Marvel Heroes is a click adventure. You get to play the different characters. You pick one of your heroes to start with. Hmm. DC Online is pretty fun.
DC is more like, because you make your own character and then you interact as like sort of NPCs. The problem I have with Marvel, as much as I really wanted to like it, you could play as Storm. You could play as Jean Grey. Great. There's 100 other Jean Greys and Storms running around, and it's stupid.
If they just would instance it so you don't see your own character all the time.
Exactly.
That is one of the biggest breaking factors.
It's kind of awkward when you're like, oh, I'm Jean Grey, and it's just like, Jean, go talk to Jean.
You could have done like a multiverse kind of angle on it. Like, make every, you could only have in your little instance or your own little server, only have so many versions, or make up your own random version of that character,
One thing that is really fun in that game, though, is characters with backstory will comment to each other if someone playing that character walks in. Captain America being my favorite, he'll make a Carol Danvers reference if she runs by. It's just super
awesome.
Neat. Yeah.
It is a little like watching your own little Marvel hero thing play out, which is kind of cool. But, yeah, I guess that's almost all we've got. I do want to again remind you guys, if you are in the Orlando area or you just wanted to keep up with us gay geeks in Orlando, we're on Facebook, Orlando Gay Geeks. It's a closed group, but if you look for it, you'll probably find it and we can approve you or what have you. We have a lot of events coming up this year. We're actually trying to like lay out a really full calendar of both regular recurring things as we decide to do, like a game night or what have you. But we also want to do like exciting events, like one-off events themed around either a video game or a comic book or some kind of part of the community, and then just have a big party and do some really cool interactions and get both the gay scene that's at the bars maybe interested in stuff that they've probably not done in a while that are sort of geeky, but also cross over and maybe bring some of that to the bar community. So trying to kind of plan that right now, but if you join the Atlanta Gay Geek group, you will find out all about what we're doing. So thank you guys so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
That was really fun.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Pop my podcast cherry. It's
were we gentle?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. You've had worse.
I've had worse. I've heard worse.
All right, that's it. Flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of Tops and Bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.